Well, greetings, Tamar Kali. Welcome to Women's Focus.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I have so many questions to ask you after watching Mudbound, which we can get on Netflix. Let me just tell everyone right away. But first of all, I wanted to ask you how you started working with Dee Reese, who is the director.
Yes. Well, Dee Reese's first feature film, Pariah, was the occasion that I was first able to work with her. Essentially, she was looking for music to include in the soundtrack and in the world of the film. And her cinematographer, Bradford Young, suggested that she check some of my work. And she did, and the producers contacted me about lending music to the film. And after that point, I got to screen the film, first of all, to make sure that it was something that I wanted to be a part of. And I was really wowed by the short that she shared with me. And I was like, absolutely, I would absolutely love to be a part of this. And it ended up growing into an actual cameo in the film where my band and I got to play in the film at a party. And I lent songs to the soundtrack as well. And I also covered a song by The Gossip for the ending credits of the film. So, you know, I ended up adding quite a bit of music to the film. And working with her at that time just opened me up to who she was as an artist and her integrity as a person. And so when her next project came along, naturally I said yes. And we've pretty much been growing our relationship and artistic collaboration since then.
I had a feeling that the reason that you really got involved in it was because of the work that she does and because you like her, not that you'd always wanted to be to do music for films.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, it's something I've thought of in the course of my career, but it wasn't something that I aggressively approached or, you know, I thought I might do something, or there have been times where I've been watching cinema and thought that some of my music might go really well with a certain director's style or certain imagery, but it wasn't something I was pursuing. But Dee's definitely someone who has inspirational leadership qualities. So, and you know, just as an artist, for me, what I think about when I think about being an artist, most times based on like the history of artists that I admire, is the opportunity to collaborate across disciplines with people you really respect.
Oh, that's right. Because you've also done music for dancing also.
Well, no. My recent project, I am collaborating with a dance ensemble, but that's like my first foray as well. Oh. So I guess what it is that as I've matured, I'm more confident in really being able to express my desire to collaborate across disciplines because, you know, that's what art is. As a composer and a performer, I'm influenced by literature, film, and dance, and why not collaborate across disciplines? And I think about a lot of historical artists that I admire, that sense of bohemia where you're artists and you may share a similar philosophy or ideology, and you're able to collaborate across genres and create some new work that's compelling and provocative.
Oh, I like that. I want to hear more about the process for you of doing the music for the film, but something that just kept nagging in the back of my head while I was watching it was, did you make suggestions and have them turned down? I mean,
you know, writing for film is a completely different animal than writing for yourself.
And, yes.
There was a trade-off for me. For some people, not being able to have final say in this type of format would be distressing for them. But as an independent artist who's been, you know, having to wear so many hats in the expression and the sustaining of my art, it was a pleasure for me to just be able to focus on one thing. For me, so not having final say was kind of the trade-off for being able to just completely immerse myself in the practice of composition solely and completely.
Wow.
Not having to. And of course, I mean, it was an indie film, so I did have an all-in budget and I did have to produce and manufacture it in terms of, you know, hiring all the players and getting the pieces together, which is something that I do already in my independent life. But the fact that it wasn't solely on my shoulders, just pretty much the creative aspect and getting from point A to Z where the creative was concerned was essentially my role. And that was a step down in terms of what is usually on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed that. And that for me was a trade-off for not having final say. But at the same time, it's like, because I'm a performing and recording artist, I don't have an expectation to really flex my ego in that type of work situation. I have the stage. I have other outlets for that.
So yeah, so you could let her sort of get have the spotlight on her or on the actors.
The film. And I mean, honestly, you know, it was a very short schedule. It was a very tight budget. But the work was so strong and impactful that I was really inspired. So there was just a flow. And I mean, everyone brought their A game, from cinematography to screenplay writing to the performances of the actors. So I was able to jump in and really just go.
And I'm talking to Tamar Colley, and we're talking about Mudbound, for which she wrote the score.
Correct.
Well, then I wondered what the process was. Was the film already edited when you saw it, and then you decided on the music, or how did that work?
The film was absolutely edited. It was almost at picture lock, which is kind of like the last step for the visual. So I came in post-production.
Oh, okay.
And so I had about 4.5 weeks to deliver a mixed and mastered score, and it was 40 minutes of music. So I came in at the very end. So I had, you know, I just had to put clothing on the baby. You know? And so
you didn't go
effort in that regard. I think that was a great scenario.
Yes. So I heard from some of the actors that it was kind of miserable doing the filming because it was so muddy, and that the kind of mud-bound feeling that you get from it was authentic.
Yes.
But you didn't have to do that. You weren't involved in that part.
No, I was not. I came in after all of that had happened and, you know, just in advance of going to the mixing stage to mix the entire sound of the film. And that's the space in which I was tasked with composing.
Okay. And tell me about some of the reaction that you've gotten, because there's so much excitement, it seems, and not hype, but actual real excitement about the film.
Yes. I mean, the work, you know, the work endures. And as I enter this new world and am introduced to all the different aspects of the industry, the thing that I like to focus on is the work itself. The work endures. And I just want to be able to grow more, explore and expand, and continue to have opportunities to collaborate with other artists, collaborate in film. I mean, for me, it's really about the work. So it's some of these. So I'm very excited when I see people responding to the work, first and foremost. You know, we're in award season right now, so it's an interesting time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting being able to separate accolades from the practice of being an artist, right? Because mm-hmm. there's an aspect in which if your work is recognized, it allows you to do more work.
Oh, right.
But then there's also just the history of legacy and brand, and, you know, so there's just a lot there in this space. So the feedback that's most touching to me are the conversations that Americans are having about their history,
mm-hmm.
what they know, what they didn't know, different aspects or angles that have been introduced to them through this work. So that's the type of feedback that is most exciting.
Okay. I can imagine that. And I told you that I thought, well, it's a hard movie to see. I mean, it's really an experience, and parts of it are very difficult to go through. And so I think you must have felt.
But imagine people actually live that.
Yes. I don't
want. That's what I feel like it's important to remember when people are like, oh, it's so hard to watch. It's way harder to live.
Uh-huh. Well, how did you feel emotionally when you were dealing with it? Because you must have really gotten taken up by it, really emotionally involved with it.
Well, there was a certain level of detachment that I engaged from because I had to have this objective initially. And, you know, like, so I feel like there was this mathematical component in terms of just trying to figure out logistics, how I was going to approach it. I had a very limited amount of time to create, trying to figure out a workflow. So I was kind of approaching it from this, I have to attack it and get it done space.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was very much moved by the work that had been laid down before I entered in to the project,
mm-hmm.
which is great. So initially, I kind of had like this very mathematical approach because there was just an urgency in what I was doing and the time that I had to get it done in.
Mm-hmm.
But then secondarily, of course, I was saying that I was really moved by the work itself, so I did get into a flow. But I had a very critical interaction. You know, it's like you're in the process of watching the film. I definitely was inspired to write and compose, but then I would always step back so that I could objectively judge and gauge the work.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah.
So there's that kind of ebb and flow, give and take, back and forth that's going on.
I guess you'd have to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, though, however, for the climax of the film, that approach wasn't working. And what I realized was for that specific cue, is what they call the different pieces that accompany the film, I realized that I had to actually have it wash over me.
Oh.
And you know, because I think that I realized that I was exhibiting in my approach to the cue and composing it a little bit of fear,
mm-hmm.
because it was a very emotional scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, you know, that bit of objective detachment, I was being triggered, essentially. And so I had to just live through that.
Oh, boy.
Watch it over and over again and basically build that composition through improvisation. Because I couldn't really approach it theoretically or analytically.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
So that's one moment where the emotional intensity of the film kind of paralleled with my process in composing the score.
Did you do the song at the end?
No, I only contributed film score.
Okay.
So my music has a place in the actual film.
Okay. I was wondering because I thought I heard Mary Kay Blige say that she's the one who did that, and I thought
she did. That's an original song that Mary sang for, you know, and that happens during the credits.
Yeah. Okay.
That she wrote with a duo of songwriters, Raphael Sadiq and Tora Stinson. I was responsible for film score music.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask was, and this sort of leads to this: what kind of things from your past do you think sort of came into your experience? Tell us
all
a little bit about your past is what I'm saying.
Well, my background in the punk rock hardcore scene, the DIY ethics of that came into play because I had very little to work with. And the reason I know how to make something out of not much is from that background, especially with music and creativity,
mm-hmm.
being an artist. My background as a classical choral singer and starting, like, you know, general music theory training in that context in Catholic school came into play because it's a chamber ensemble. It's a, you know, modern classical work. So that came into play. My ethno-cultural musical traditions as someone who's Afro-Indigenous, descended from enslaved Africans brought to the Americas, and indigenous folk hair. So the blues, that's part of my ethnocultural musical tradition. That took, it's very minimal. It's just the congregational hummings, but that comes from that tradition.
Mm.
So I feel like I so much of my past and my history came to bear.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure whether the congregation, whether their singing or humming was something that if I had gone to church, I would know. But
mm-hmm. See, that was source music. So that was music that was sourced to be in the film. Mm-hmm. Mine has very minimal humming on some of the parts of the score that I wrote. That's instrumental music. So my contribution was to compose music that underscored the film. So not music that was sourced for the film, but music that underscored the film, and it's all instrumental.
Okay. And then I was wondering, what do you expect could come out of this film and probably come out of Pariah also? What do you think they could accomplish besides being something that people want to see?
Well, Pariah being a coming-of-age story for a young Black queer girl, I know that it remains a pivotal artifact for people even now. I've heard of quite a few different people from different places talking to me about the impact of that film on young queer people and helping them to identify themselves and essentially come out. And so that, you know, that will remain. I'm so grateful that it's there and that it's a testament so that youth who are struggling with their identity can have basically a voice. And they're, you know, still finding the film. And I know that that will continue until queerness is no longer a marginalized identity in our society. So there's that. And in terms of Mudbound, it's an American classic. And regardless of what nods it will receive in terms of nominations or even receiving awards, the work endures. And I'm 50 years from now, it will still stand up as a great American classic in my estimation.
Hmm. I think that's interesting to say, something that is so recent to say it's a classic, but I can understand what you're saying because
it's in that tradition of classic American films. I mean, It's this moment in time for us as a country, and the new approach in terms of the humanization of the Black family, the development of the characters, you know, of the stories. It's imbued with so much humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say a new American classic, because it's existing in a space and a time, and at the very capable hands of a director who is able to imbue it with so much humanity in terms of the development of the characters. And, I mean, even if you look at the relationship portrayed between Mary J. Blige and Carey Mulligan, when have we seen that type of nuance before?
Yes.
People look at just, you know, the trailer or what have you, and they feel like they know what it's about. And they're often so completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people refer to it as a Slavery Days movie, which it does not take place during chattel slavery in America. It's so interesting how many people are unfamiliar with the term sharecropper even.
Oh.
You know, definitely an educational tool when it has the opportunity to be used as such, because people are so unfamiliar with a lot of the themes. People think it's a racism movie. No, it's an American movie, and racism is part of the fabric of our society. So it's very interesting how that nuance challenges what people think they know.
Yes, I like that way of characterizing it. Well, you've talked a little bit about what your process is of making film scores, but tell me how this fits into your music life.
Got it. Well, you know, I'm an artist. And creating art is the thing that I live for. And this is just another mode of expression for me. You know, I like to think about it kind of with a painting analogy. It's that I have a palette in front of me. And, you know, I have all these colors that I can pick up to create. And whether that's my performing and recording career, whether that's composing for film, it's all just me being a musician and being an artist.
But for our listeners who may not know you, let's tell them where else they can find you.
At my website, tamarkali.com, and that's T-A-M-A-R hyphen K-A-L-I.com. And I have a small little discography there, the independent artist, a debut EP, a full-length album, a live EP, and I've also done my share of collaborating with other artists, so you can find me on the recordings of other artists as well. So if you do a search specifically for my discography, you'll find me in a couple of different places.
Okay, and tell me about what you did in Detroit, because I thought that our listeners would be interested in that.
Well, I mean, I performed in Detroit on several occasions for the Allied Media Conference, for an annual event during Women's Month at the Charles H. Wright Museum called Black Women Rock.
Oh, that was it. I think that was what I was thinking of.
I perform all over the country, and I've performed in Europe, and, you know, I would love to get some more continents under my belt, for sure. You know, that would be exciting.
Yeah, that would be nice. So I think the best place to find you is on your website. Again, I'm talking...
And on Bandcamp. Bandcamp is another great place to find me as well.
Again, I'm talking to Tamar Colley, and we're talking about her performing career, but also we're talking about Mudbound and a recent film that you did the score for. Do you have any other thoughts about doing any more films?
I'm working on a film right now, in fact.
Oh, wow. Can you tell us?
I'm not at liberty just yet, but hopefully soon you will know exactly and when.
Oh, so great.
Excited about this project as well. Like I said, I'm just looking forward to the opportunity of being able to collaborate with other artists who have solid work, and that we can push each other and inspire each other. And, you know, like that's the good life.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I can't wait to hear about that. When will you be divulging what it is?
As soon as I get a word, I guess, from production and the studio that we're good to announce.
Oh, okay. Well, that's exciting. That's great. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time with us and letting us know about the process. I like to hear about that, and I also like to hear about what your analysis of the film is, so people can see how much there is to it, how much richness is there, is I guess what I'm trying
to
say.
You know, and hopefully if more of these films see the light of day or get visibility that, you know, once it gets past a certain point, we can actually change the perception of these things in society. You know, I was watching Dunkirk the other day, and no one ever complains, oh, here's another World War II movie. You know what I mean? No one ever says that. So I think that there needs to be a certain amount of self-reflection and investigating what the pushback and the triggers are when we see faces that we're not used to on the screen, or moments in our history that are not so flattering, and why we have a knee-jerk reaction to them.
Yes, you're right. And I think we need to do that more often. But as I said, it's also difficult, but something that we have to deal with.
Hey, and you know, if we can deal with the difficult past, we won't make choices that create a difficult present or future.
Oh, let's hope for that. Well, thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to share with you.